Good afternoon, this is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Banca Ifis 9-month 2024 results conference call. As a reminder, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. Should anyone need assistance during the conference call, they may signal an operator by pressing star and zero on their telephone. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Frederik Geertman, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, madam, and good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our 9-month 2024 conference call. I would, as always, take you through the presentation and leave some time for questions at the end. So if that's all right with you, I'll take you straight to page four, where we give the synthesis of our three quarters results. The third quarter saw net income of 33 million, which is flat year-on-year. 9-month 2024 net income is at 127 million, which is a progression of 2% year-on-year. Revenue is reflecting the typical summer seasonality and the expected, I should say, increase in cost of funding. To mitigate sensitivity to declining interest rates in the coming months and years, we have strategically extended the duration of our government bond portfolio, and we try, where possible, to make new business at fixed rates, especially in the leasing area. So we try in this way to enhance the stability of the interest income. In Q3, we saw some limited signs of asset quality deterioration, the classification of specific exposures in certain sectors. So very limited, I would say, and very focused on specific issues, nothing widespread, but we want to signal it. And finally, we can confidently confirm our 2024 guidance at 160 million euros of net income. Financial position of the bank is very, very robust. We have 2.1 billion in available cash and cash equivalents. Notably, we have completed the TLTRO repayment. So the last amount was 0.4 billion. It was repaid in 2024, so there's nothing left now. And we report a CET1 ratio of 16.43% at 30th September. That's including the net income after deducting the dividends that were accrued in the first 9 months. The dividends that we have deliberated today in the board are 1.2 euros per share to be paid on the 20th of November for 63 million euros total. The ex-dividend date is the 18th. The record date is the 19th. Taking you to page five, revenue focus. The revenues in Q3 were 157 million, minus 4% year-on-year due to the cost of funding increase. Over 9 months, we are at 531.8 million, therefore plus 3.8% year-on-year. Breaking it down, commercial banking revenues at 93 million, which were 87 million in the second quarter and 84 million in third quarter 23. Based on commercial performance and pricing discipline that we will talk about later, largely offsetting the cost of funding increase. NPL revenues at 55 million, which were 86 million in the second quarter and 66 million in the third quarter of 23, due to a fairly marked seasonality in judicial and extrajudicial workout. Non-core and GNS at 9 million, which was 16 million in the second quarter of 24 and 14 in the third quarter of 23. The proprietary book confirmed itself as a recurrent and stable contribution to revenues, as you've seen, I believe, in the last quarters. On page six, we give a little bit of information on how we're dealing with the rate scenario. As we mentioned, the cost of funding has peaked in the bank. It's now stabilized. We expect it to decrease henceforward. To manage, if you will, the overall sensitivity of the bank to a decrease in interest rates, we've simulated a 50 basis points decrease. That simulation in March yielded 11 to 13 million euros of impact, negative. In September, that's 8 to 10, and we will continue to strategically work to reduce the sensitivity to scenario, which is expected, right, where in the following quarters the reference rates will be reduced. How do we do that? We increase the duration of the proprietary bond portfolio. We're at 3.3 years now. We increase the origination of fixed-rate leasing and in general fixed-rate lending where possible. That's increased from 29% in the first 9 months of 23 to 80% this year. And we decreased deposits in Bank of Italy, which are remunerated less, of course, from 0.9 billion to 0.4 billion. Now, cash position remains very, very large and more significant than that, obviously due to the assets that we can pledge that count as liquidity. Page 7, commercial activity. Factoring turnover stable year on year with a market that does minus 4. Quite a performance, I would say, considering the spreads. The average spreads are at 3.98%. That's on top of the base rate. Consider what the base rates did, right, during the peak of the interest rates increase by the central banks. We think that's very solid. On leasing, we're seeing that the tax incentives that are being made available are providing some acceleration for the leasing market in Q4. Equipment leasing is very much exposed to these types of measures being in place or not being in place. The implementation decrees for the Industry 5.0 tax incentives were approved actually only in July. And thus far, we haven't seen any significant impact due to their complexity. So on equipment and technology leasing, we see that the SMEs had delayed some CapEx decisions. We have on the first 9 months, right, we report a slowdown of 11%, which is, you know, less severe than the market's decline of 16% in the quarter, which you see in the bars. We do minus 12%, the market does minus 1%. As said, it's a little bit, goes a little bit up and down, and it's quite exposed to these tax incentives. We can talk about it maybe later a little bit. Automotive leasing is outperforming the market. We remain focused on, as you know, on premium segments. We remain focused on pricing, and we make sure that we have remarketing agreements in place, as we do not want to have a significant exposure to the value of certain brands. So the spreads on the basis of this policy are quite high at 3.97%, up 6 basis points year on year. So that's an increase even. NPL portfolio, page 8. Mind you that the bars do not include the Revalia acquisition, right? So we have third quarterly cash collection, excluding Revalia, of 83 million, including of 97, that's down obviously because of seasonality versus the second quarter. If we look at revenues, we have excluding Revalia 53 million, including Revalia 62 million. It should be noted in that respect that starting early 2024, we concentrated on the Revalia purchase and integration, limiting significant other portfolio acquisitions, given that we had acquired, you know, 6.8 billion gross, over 250 million net of NPLs. In this quarter, Revalia contributed, as you saw, right, 8 million to the revenues and 14 million to the cash collections. You see it from the numbers that are written above the bar charts. We saw some slightly longer time frames in the secured corporate segment. We don't have very much of those loans, but they are present. It's a small sub portfolio that's managed in Ravenna. What I would add is that, you know, we see quite marked seasonality, a little bit more marked than previous years. October appears to be a normal October, so we do not appear to be in the presence of a lasting trend in terms of collections or revenues, and of course we started purchasing portfolios again in Q3. Page 9, inflation impact countered by efficiency, is the standard title we put on that chart. Operating costs are 94 million. Other operating costs are down 6 million Q-on-Q. Lower IT, NPL onboarding operations, and marketing expenses, right? This includes some IT and project expenses that are substantially stable as we execute our projects, right, that are in our three-year plan. Those projects are mostly on time, which means that, you know, we're gradually winding them up and finishing them, and we're confident that as we finish the three-year plan, the whole of the digitalization agenda, cybersecurity agenda, credit process agenda, etc., has all been completely executed. Costs directly linked to NPL recovery decreased Q-on-Q, as you would expect. They're seasonal as the revenues are. If you compare with 23, you should note that this in 24, it includes 4 million NPL recovery costs of Revalea. Going to page 10, loan loss provisions. We have 13 million euros of loan loss provisions in the quarter. We see that the coverage ratio, all in all, increases from 45% to 46%, slightly different mix. Some past dues of the pharma business. You will remember that we have this portfolio in runoff where we purchased invoices from the National Health Service, or to the National Health Service, I should say. And that's gradually disappearing, which is good news. The remaining past dues are normal in nature, so they tend to be slightly more reserved. On the lower side of the chart, the NPE ratios, you see a slight increase from 5.4 to 5.7 gross and 3.0 to 3.2 net. This increase is mainly due to the lower stocks of the performing loans, and that's connected to the factoring seasonality. If you look at the actual amounts, they're stable Q on Q, so there's no significant increase, even though we have, as I mentioned, classified a number of single exposures in specific segments, i.e. steel and automotive mostly, in this quarter. The application of the new definition of default, as you know, leads to the reclassification to past due of this stock of loans. I've already mentioned it. You can see that stock is nicely decreasing from 1 to 0.6% gross and from 1 to 0.5% net. So that's going exactly as planned. Are there any signs on page 11 of a widespread risk issue? It appears not. We try to share with the market here always the most, how should I say, predictive indicators that we have, right? Let's take a look at them. Payment days in factoring, they're stable. They're actually roughly 15 days lower than they were in 2022. So no tension appears to be present at all in the capability of the corporates to pay their bills. I remind you, these are not past dues. This is the actual time in which they pay, right? So it would be perfectly legitimate for them to pay in 89 days. Top right corner, stage one and stage two loans. Actually, a small decrease in stage two loans from 10% to 9% in this quarter. So there too, no sign of widespread issues in the Italian corporates. Rating migrations, fairly stable. The upgrades roughly balance the downgrades. Slightly variable Q on Q, but I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't give too much importance to it. The probability of default of the book remains roughly stable, as you can see on the bottom right graph, right? We're at 2.9% in the third quarter. So we don't appear to have in the economy or in our book any widespread issues. Quarter results, I'll comment on them on them a little bit this time. Page 12. So you can see net interest income over 9 months in 2024 is at 404 million. Last year was 409. As you know, the bank prudently maintained approximately 0.7 billion, I would say, in excess cash to make sure that we would be really comfortable to repay the TLTRO and to meet loan demand if it would arrive. This conservative approach leads to an increase in costs of about 10 million euros. That's, if you will, the price of the insurance of wanting to, be absolutely sure that the TLTRO repayment would not give us any sign of tension. That's projected to be 13 million for the full year, and that, as I mentioned, is the price of the insurance that we created by issuing a bond at the beginning of the year and by attracting 600-700 million of additional retail funding at quite high prices in the months of January, February, March of this year. There's also, as I mentioned, some marked seasonality in this year in NPL workouts. I also mentioned already we expect normal results in Q4. Part of it, I think, is slightly exacerbated by the fact that in the first 9 months of this year, we concentrated on the acquisition and integration of Revalia, so there wasn't a lot of new portfolios coming in and being released onto the servicing operations. We have resumed purchasing NPL portfolios in Q3. We have made a few transactions. Some of them are reasonable in size. Then income from the proprietary portfolio is 28 million. That is partly driven by the sales of some government bonds that were executed both in June and in September. We had a favorable interest rate situation, so as part of normal trading activities, we made some profits there. At the same time, we've increased the portfolio duration of the remaining bonds to enhance the yield. And finally, capital gains. That's quite a recurring form of revenue for us. We have 13 million capital gains from our private equity investments. You know that we have a portfolio of very fragmented and selective minority investments in companies that are bought by private equity players that we partner with. We also had around 10 million from the disposal of NPL portfolio tails. As a matter of, good housekeeping, when the portfolio has been worked, we try to pass it on to players who are specialized in these tails and not to keep them on our books. It makes it easier to monitor the situation. It makes the business more transparent. We are able to sell those portfolios at a small profit. So that's also a form of capital gain that you should consider fairly recurring, certainly on an annual basis. May not be there every quarter, but on an annual basis, those are quite recurring facts. So that's the way that the revenues over the 9 months have been built up. Going to page 13, capital ratios, that's looking very, very solid. We go from 15.32 to 16.43. Part of that is the seasonality in risk-weighted assets. Part of it is that we have lower risk-weighted assets due to the introduction of the Fitch rating, the ICAI Fitch rating, that also contributed, and that's a benefit that's here to stay. Finally, we have the 24 basis points increase in the OCI reserve and the reintroduction of prudential transitional filters on the government bonds, adding up to a 1.11% increase in the quarter, putting us at the end of our business plan, if things stay similar, right, in Q4, in an extremely favorable capital position, and also relative to the business plan targets. You may recall that we had a business plan target of staying above 14. It looks like we'll close the business plan with the same amount of capital, maybe even slightly more, that we had when we started the business plan. Page 14, concluding remarks. We confirmed the guidance of 160 million, one quarter to go, and that would this is the last quarter of our three-year plan. What are we seeing now in the second half of 2024, right? And you may, with your mind, also maybe think about the next quarters. Quite moderate loan demand. Corporates are streamlining their funding, and there was a lot of liquidity injected, as you know, post-COVID, mostly in the form of long-term loans, very often with government guarantees attached. The economy is obviously slightly slowing down. We don't have a very significant growth in Europe or in Italy. Italy doing slightly better than some other European countries. We see some competition in lending to the highest rating corporates. Banks are liquid, they have capital, and it seems that they are looking for business. We focus on profitability, and we successfully increased the average spreads compared to previous year. That's a very important point in terms of discipline and also in terms of not being interested in aggressively building long-term loan books just because there are government guarantees. You will know that we have created a book of roughly 800 million, but in a very stable and progressive growth path. Second item, obviously, in the second half of the year is the ECB. It has already reduced interest rates by 75% since June. Starting from Q1, we have decreased our sensitivity to this. So obviously, we've reacted. Asset quality, what are we seeing? As I mentioned, in Q3, we had some defaults. It hadn't really happened with sizable companies for a couple of years. They were all concentrated, or all but one concentrated in either automotive or steel. So we have no indication at all of a wider issue, but we had some loans going to non-performing in the quarter. Obviously, our business model is quite favorable. We have a strong portfolio diversification across sectors and borrowers. We have fragmented loans. We do mostly short-term lending, and we have a very robust collateral management, not only in the form of government guarantees, but also in the leasing segment. The risk outlook appears still benign. Personal opinion, over the next couple of years, I would expect a normalization of the cost of risk. As I've said on previous occasions, the very low risk observed in the Italian banking sector is a function, certainly, of the quality of the corporates, because the cleanups that were made in those balance sheets were huge, but also, I think, a consequence of the enormous amount of liquidity that was injected. And that's something that I think is, in its nature, is transitory. So it will, at some point, it will ease out. So in the midterm, I would expect, you know, a normalization of cost of risk, but all the indicators we have, as I mentioned, still point to a very benign scenario. Finally, the NPL business. We had achieved our NPL purchase targets significantly in advance, ahead of schedule. So we were a bit more selective in 2024. We started buying again in Q3. In the medium term, I would expect, well, first of all, in our house, we will partner with co-investors and share some profitability and risk of the NPL business with certain structures that may help us alleviate the impact of calendar provisioning. And I think what you should expect is over the years, right? So it's not something that is relevant on a quarter-by-quarter basis. But over the years, given the way this sector is maturing, the weight of the NPL business probably going to gradually decrease a bit in our overall balance sheet, in our overall income statement, but we will compensate with the additional businesses that we have, right? I would pause here and open the floor for any questions that you may have, and I wait for those questions. Thank you for your attention this far.
Thank you. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their telephone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Please pick up the receiver when asking questions. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from Fabrizio Bernardi of Intermonte.
Good evening, and thanks for this presentation. The first question would be about any color you may want to share with us about the bottom line in 2025. We know you, Banca is very precise about, say, the guidance. So, any sentiment, any color, any flavor you may want to share with us would be very appreciated. Then, the second question is that I think you mentioned that you are waiting for another cut in 2025 in terms of Euribor rates. So the question is, how can you, let's say, deal with this? And last but not least, curiosity about the fact that you are introducing the double voting rights scheme. So I'm wondering, given a shareholder base, which is the rationale behind it? Thank you.
Can I just ask you to repeat the third question, please, Fabrizio? I didn't get that. We didn't hear you that well. Thank you.
You are introducing the double voting rights scheme. So I think it's like something like if you are shareholders for more than 2 years, we have a double voting right. So I was wondering about the rationale behind the scheme.
Thank you, Fabrizio. Yes, very clear. Okay. So bottom line in 2025, let me be a bit generic. We don't have a business plan for 2025, 2027. We're actually starting the work on that. I expect that we will present it before the summer, right, of 2025. So I cannot comment too specifically, besides telling you that the way we see the bank performing, the way the business is structured, and the scenario around us, we are quite confident that we will continue to be a bank that provides attractive returns and equally attractive dividends payments, right? Remember that even if we were to assume, right, the normalization of the cost of risk scenario, the bank has put aside significant overlays, and we expect to release these in the coming 18 months, right? So either way, we release them because risks appear and we use them against those risks, or we will release them as they flow towards the P&L, as you can't keep those indefinitely, right? So let me give you a constructive feeling for 2025 without giving any numbers. On the macro scenario, until now it's been quite supportive, right? The rates are a bit higher than we were actually expecting at the start of the year. You remember there was a huge overshooting, I think, of the expectations on rate reduction. We don't have signals of a recession. We have maybe slow growth in Europe, right? But nothing much worse. I won't get into really, really macro geopolitics, as I guess everybody can have their own ideas. So I think we are in a reasonably positive scenario still for the banking sector, right? Even though it may not be the total blue sky scenario, right? That we saw in 23 and 24 that generated the huge profits that you saw in the European banking sector. On rates, how to deal with rates and with the cost of funding. We mentioned it in the Q2 results call. We had reached the 3.9% and we saw it stabilizing. I can confirm that now it's actually going down slightly. So we expect an average cost of funding for 2024 to be below 4%. And the trend is ongoing. Now in 2025, it will depend, of course, on rates, right? If I can give you, and this assumes, right, a certain rate scenario. So there's a little bit of speculation in this, but if you're looking for a number, I don't want to duck the questions. We would like to remain below 3.5% cost of funding based on the current forward curves, right? But that's a little bit speculative, right? So yes, expect us to be able to reduce the cost of funding significantly. It's already peaked. It's going down. Of course, what we will need to manage, and we're very focused on that, is what happens on the asset side of the balance sheet, right? Because the sum of these two effects will give you the net interest margin. Finally, double voting rights. It is exactly as you said. The shareholders meeting has to deliberate this, but the objective is to give shares that have a long-term commitment to the bank double voting rights. It's legally allowed in Italy, of course. There's been a specific law that made this possible. The objective being, which is also our objective, to promote stability in the shareholder base of the listed companies, also supporting maybe projects that take some time to develop, thereby, hopefully, we'll see, also reducing in general, I'm saying, not just on us, right, stock volatility, right, attracting stable investors. It can help to minimize swings, right? Now, as you know, we have an equity story, if you will, that is based on a long-term view. The controlling shareholder is always taking a long-term view, and you can see that in our risk profile. You can see it also in specific decisions that the bank took, i.e. not doing very opportunistic things in terms of lending, not doing very opportunistic things in terms of, you know, businesses that suddenly popped up, like, for instance, super bonus type of assets purchases, right? So long-term perspective, and the bank likes to have shareholders that share, all shareholders, not just the controlling shareholders, that share a long-term perspective and that are interested in our long-term plans and are interested in our long-term commitment to buying, to giving stable and generous dividends. Okay? So that's the rationale behind the double voting right. I hope I answered your question.
Yes, for sure. One last thing. There has been a very strong spike in terms of capital ratios between the second and the third quarter. Most of it is related to RWA decrease. I know that there are some prudential transitional filters and the OCI reserves and so on. My question is there any, let's say, not a commitment, but is there any fear about net new money in your business? So we can assume that maybe this kind of RWA decrease may diminish across time, or is there any, let's say, embedded strategy by the bank about net new money, so increasing the stock of new loans? Because to be honest, never seen such a huge RWA increase. So what I think is there any view about the fact that the group may be scared about the evolution of the asset quality? You mentioned before that there were some positions that were in trouble, or is just a temporary, let's say, decrease?
I'm having a really hard time understanding. I'm sorry, Fabrizio. So I'm sorry if I didn't get your question right. You were asking about the evolution of cost of risk from Q3 onwards to.
Can you hear me a little bit better now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, sorry, it was my headphones that was not working well. So what I'm asking is, on page 13, there is a clear scheme about the evolution of the common equity, which is going up to levels that are very, very high, and most of this is related to the RWA decrease. So I guess that it's a problem of stock of, let's say, loans in general terms. So is this a temporary situation, or is this, let's say, an issue about what you think about the evolution of the cost of risk? So you are, let's say, very, very, let's say, focused on group of positions that are safe, and you don't want to, let's say, take more risk about asset quality.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, that was better. So
sorry,
yes, we had an increase.
My fault.
No, that's fine. That's fine, no problem. So yes, we had this 87 basis points that is attributed to risk-weighted assets decrease. Now, this is a little bit of a simplification, because obviously risk-weighted assets have one dynamic and loans have another dynamic. Now, part of that is loan decrease. I would consider that seasonality. So we haven't had a massive slowdown in new lending or a massive slowdown in new clients in factoring. I think the loan decrease in this quarter, you can fully ascribe to seasonality, and we don't have any, particularly harsh credit policy that's generating less assets, because we don't see the reason to execute a thing like that, right? So besides the normal risk policies and a very, very disciplined focus on margins, there's nothing else. The other parts of the RWA decrease that are not connected to a decrease in credit, right, is, as I mentioned, things that reduce the risk density of the book, right? And those are just benefits. They materialize in this quarter. You may actually see some other benefits appearing in Q4. So actually, if you would ask me to make a prediction of how this will develop, probably it will stay roughly where we are, based on an increase in risk-weighted assets due to the seasonality, right, which in Q4 we expect, as always, to go back up, and some other benefits in terms of risk density that we are putting in place. So roughly expect this to be where we are now at the end of the year. And in terms of risk policies or credit policies, really nothing new to report. I confirm that, we had a couple defaults on mid-corporate historical clients in the sectors that I mentioned. We've been looking very carefully at our exposure in those segments and also the other ones, and we don't think there's anything that in the short term would merit attention. So no change in risk policies. And to answer your question, given this level of capital, if we would have opportunities to grow the asset base, with the current approach to risk and with a reasonable pricing, we'd be very happy to take it. In our opinion, the bank is currently balanced between its discipline and the opportunities that are out there. If we could do more, so distribute more effectively, we would be happy to do it. Hope I answered. Okay.
Yes, thank you very much for your answers.
The next question is from Giuseppe Grimaldi of BNP Paribas.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for your presentation. First of all, let me congratulate for your second appointment, Mr. Gertman. I wish you all the best for the second
mandate.
Thank
you. You're very kind.
And on my side, I have actually couple of questions. The first one relates to the NPL business. We saw this quarter a pretty chunky, seasonality. Do you expect some recovery into Q4 to recover part of the ground lost? And on the other side of the spectrum, the performance of the portfolio was remarkable. So should we expect this to continue in the coming quarters? And the second question relates to the overlays. Are they all intact in your balance sheet in absolute figure, or have you used it in Q3? That's all.
Oh, sorry, I was replying to your question, but I had the mic switched off. Sorry, Giuseppe. In your first question, you mentioned that there was a portfolio that was performing very well. You were referring to the financial portfolio. You were asking us if that would continue to perform like this?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you. So on the NPL business, we the seasonality was a bit more marked than we thought, right, than we would have expected, but we analyzed it and we think it is what it is. It is a quarter that was a bit slower, and that's probably been exacerbated a little bit by this phenomenon that I mentioned, i.e. that from since the end of 23 we were really quite selective, right? So Revalia obviously gave us a contribution this quarter, right? 8 million in revenues and 14 million in cash collections. And we've restarted purchasing. So, we would assume that this is in Q3. It's not a trend. Also, on the basis of what we saw in October, we don't think this is a trend. Now, more in the medium term, you can see it in our report. We have a very detailed report that came out in September. It's called the NPL Watch. I think, you know, if you look at this industry, it is quite obvious that the industry is maturing. It's quite obvious that the banks are producing less NPLs, and it's quite obvious that most of the risk has been translated from banks to investors already. So the early years of this business were very, very rich and very, very profitable. In the meantime, obviously, players have matured, have become more specialized, and especially Banca Ifis has become very specialized in small tickets, unsecured. So in this segment, we will continue to remain present, but in a context in which, in the medium term, probably the opportunities are going to be a bit less rich. So over the next quarters, no concerns about, you know, the health of the NPL business itself. In the long term, obviously, one needs to take into account that the profitability that was built up in the early years won't probably be present in this market as it was back then, right? As it matures. On the financial portfolio, can we assume that this continues? There is a non-recurring element in it, in the sense that we made some sales, right? So there were some government bonds that were sold in June and in September. So we had some profit taking there. On the other hand, we've increased the yield of the portfolio by making the duration longer. And I can assume, but it's probably not every quarter, I can assume that these opportunities will arise again. So I wouldn't consider them completely one-off, right? And I would, if you look at the evolution quarter by quarter in the last, I would say, 2 years, right? I think what you will appreciate is that the proprietary portfolio has been actually a stable contributor. And I would say the same for the equity investments. We make very selective, small fragmented equity investments together with our private equity partners that we finance in the structured finance business. We only make them when we really like the asset. We don't have a budget that needs to be somehow invested, so we can afford to be really opportunistic, positively opportunistic, and the portfolio of these investments has performed really, really well. So we will continue doing this. Now, of course, you don't every quarter have exits. You don't every quarter see, you know, EBITDA development so positive that you can increase the value of the participations. But I would consider it, I wouldn't consider it one-off. So I would be supportive of a positive view on the proprietary finance and on the investment part also in the future, right? And then Q on Q, it may vary a little bit, but I think if we take a yearly view on this, what I said will hold over time, no doubt. You asked about the overlays. They're not fully intact, meaning that we used some. As these assets, there are these loans that I mentioned, turned non-performing, we used some overlays against those, so we allocated some. The majority of these overlays are still present, so we used them only partly, and very partly, I would say. And at the time frame I would give you for, substantial elimination of these overlays, right, is roughly 18 months. I don't think we could justify keeping them for much longer. I hope this answers your question, Giuseppe.
Yes, thanks. Very clear.
The next question is from Davide Giuliano of Equita.
So, good afternoon and thank you for taking my questions. First, I'll join my colleague in congratulating on the renewal of your mandate, Frederick, and good luck to all the management team for the new business plan. But moving to the question, I have three, if I may. The first one on factoring, NII performance is very strong in the quarter and growing sequentially despite the unfavorable seasonality and lower rates. Can you elaborate on this a bit more? And the second one, a follow-up on overlays. Is the decline in Stage 2 coverage due to that? And if you can give us the exact number, I missed it before. And the third one on leasing, there have been some newspaper articles in recent days about possible changes in the application of VAT and also about a possible reduction in the risk weight of these exposures. Have you made any consideration internally about the impact of the change in on the timing on VAT on the leasing demand for the future? Thank you.
Yeah, I'll take the first two, and not having really an answer, I will confess on the third one. I will pass it to Martino Dario, who's volunteered. So, but I will confess that I wouldn't be able to answer it. It's probably a bit early, but you know, maybe Martino has thought about it. Now I'll pass the microphone to him. So factoring performance relative to the market, I think is very solid. And if you compare it on a slightly longer time frame, actually, I think it is remarkable. In Italy, over the last probably 5 years, but maybe even longer, short-term lending has become less prevalent because banks have allowed, if you pass the term, companies to finance themselves with long-term lending to a much more significant degree, even when there are no specific investment plans present. So we've sort of accepted the view that if a company is healthy, it can finance itself with long-term lending regardless of the use of those funds. And that was obviously possible given that there was a rates environment which allowed for very cheap long-term lending. And it was made even more attractive given that there were government guarantees. So in this context, if you look at the way the bank's loan books are built up, and talk about 5 years roughly, right? Maybe more. I remember from previous experience that we had serious trouble keeping the short-term lending up because it's more expensive and because it's more work. The fact that this bank has gradually grown its factoring book, and even in the last quarters, right, has outperformed the market, is actually a testament to its ability to have client relations to justify its pricing with exceptional platforms, very user-friendly digital interaction with the clients, which, as you know, in factoring is continuous, and that's very different from a long-term loan. And so the fact that spreads have actually even increased over this time, whilst the stocks have moderately grown, I think is a remarkable testament of the quality of the relationships and of the platforms that the bank has. We don't talk about it that much in analyst calls because it tends to become boring, but we've spent a lot of time and energy in becoming the most performing factoring platform in terms of user experience, in terms of usability, in terms of speed of answering of the country. And I think if we are keeping this business as it is, then it's probably the consequence of those types of investments. So yes, I would say it's really good, and we consider it core business. It's the essence of where the bank comes from, and it's definitely a very attractive business, also in terms of duration of the loans, risk fragmentation, and the capability that you have to react when companies go into trouble. If you give a long-term loan, it's given, you can't do a thing. In a factoring relationship, most of the time, you will actually recover your money, even if problems appear. And doing all this with a spread of 4%, that's not easy. 4% on top of the base rate. the part probably of the explanation is also that we have costs associated with it, because I remind you that we have own distribution. So we have 26 branches all over the country with hundreds of colleagues who are specialists. And this is not the type of business that you can do with third-party distribution, with agents or that type of stuff, right? So it involves a cost, but as you've seen, it's highly remunerative. Overlays, we haven't given a specific number, and as I mentioned, the majority of them are still in place. We will communicate like this as we will, use them over the next 18 months. I don't want to enter a cycle where we update every quarter on the single million euro number, the amount of overlays. I think it is more opportune in a credit committee than in an analyst call. So we've mentioned the number when we had built it up. We're giving the time frame when we are when we expect to use it. Most of it's still there, I confirm. So we used some of it, and expect it to be gone in 12 to 18 months. On the leasing and VIT and changes in regulation, I will pass to Martino, who volunteered. Thank you.
Hello. I will be very brief. It's too early, as the CEO was saying, it's too early to give a precise opinion. Bear in mind that this is discussed at the sector level and with the ASILEA, which is the Association of the Leasing Business. Of course, if approved in these terms, it will be positive in terms of risk-weighted assets, lower capital absorption. It is difficult yet to make an estimate in for the change on VAT on how the clients will react to that. Can be potentially negative, but really at the present time is very difficult to make an assessment. We monitor this very carefully.
Thank you.
Is it okay, Davide? Okay.
Fine.
Thank you.
The next question is from Simonetta Chiriotti of Mediobanca.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and congratulations also from my side. I have three questions, a couple of NPLs and the one on M&A. So on the NPLs, my question is, when do you expect to have an impact on the segment of calendar provisioning, and consequently to have to adopt the new way of purchasing assets in the segment, so through partnership and joint ventures? And second question on this segment, you said that medium-term prospects are less exciting than in the past. Will you have to adjust the cost structure to the new market prospects? And the third question on M&A, so you said before that you would be happy to expand distribution at the right conditions. So what should we expect? So you have already several segments. Do you want to grow where you already are present? Do you want to add new segments? Distribution channels? What would be the right target? Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so on NPLs, first of all, let me say that it's not a black or white situation, right? So even today, we have in the portfolios we bought, we have quite some loans with calendar provisioning. They are generating a deduction from our CET1 ratio. We don't mention it, but it's there. And so as we purchase, we have purchased loans with calendar provisioning. Given the capital levels at which we are now, we could actually have quite a tolerance for purchasing them. And we have, and I think we will over the next quarters do that. Now, of course, in terms of ROE, right, it tends to depress the attractiveness a little bit, so it becomes more attractive to do it with structures that allow you to deconsolidate, that allow you to maintain, hopefully significant, we think a significant part of the profits that are created, thus slightly less revenues, but much less capital absorption. Therefore, in terms of revenues, slightly negative development, in terms of ROE, a very positive development, and expect that to be rather gradual. So we've been rigorous and thoughtful about setting up these structures. If you were to ask me when roughly they could start to operate, I would suggest Q1, Q2, 2025 is a totally reasonable time frame. But even if it weren't Q1, 25, keep in mind that we can comfortably purchase calendar provisioning NPLs. We have them today. And if we see good portfolios, given where we are with 16.4 CET1 level, we can really afford to go on for quite some time and just, take the extra weight. It's not efficient in the long term, so we'd like to morph, if you will, over the next business plan to an asset management model, right? Which is very, very attractive in terms of ROE, but it will mean sharing some revenues and some profits with the third-party investors. Now, it is a core business for us, and we will stay in it, right? We think that the position that we have, given our specializations and our market share in the non-performing small tickets unsecured area, is unparalleled. So when you say adjust cost structure, actually what we're seeing is that until now, and we think we have further ways to go, the use of technology and the use of becoming smart in the way you interact with the debtors, the frequency with which you interact with the debtors, the digital channels that you can activate to interact with your debtors, actually are very, very remunerative projects. We have this stock of 1.5 million euro, 1.5 million debtors. There's a gross book value that's north of 25 billion. And there's an enormous amount of value that can be extracted from it by reasonable, socially responsible, but technology-driven recovery. So those are the projects that are ongoing, and you can hear from those terms that I'm using how much we are committed to the business. I will, however, also in an analyst call, make sure that you know that we know that over the midterm, the profitability of this business will require attention. So either we improve in the way we are explaining, and we find models like the one I described to deal with calendar provisioning, or it will become a less attractive business. So don't, in those words, in those elements of attention that I put forward, don't assume that the commitment of the bank is in any way less focused on this business. We think we are, we have an unparalleled capability, both in terms of pricing and in terms of recovery. And we are quite sure that over the next years, we can generate a lot of value from it still in an environment that's changing and that we need to react to. That's the bottom line. M&A, I can imagine the question also comes from the CET1 position, right? Because it's obviously it gives us space. We don't have any deal on the table now that is sizable enough for me to mention it. We always look at opportunities. We've never stopped looking at them. Then, when Revalia came up, it was obviously already a business we were in, so it wasn't really considered a big news. But in any case, we considered it M&A because the type of negotiation, the type of transaction was definitely M&A. We like businesses where we have two elements. One, clear synergies with what we already do. So our capabilities are somehow good to develop that business and to add value on it. Second, And then maybe third, I would say. Second, businesses which have a size that do not impair our capital position or our funding position, so we want to be able to comfortably digest, if you will, the acquisition. And third, anything that would be conducive to having more attractive funding would also be looked at with interest, right? These are the criteria, and also in M&A taking a long term view. I hope, Simonetta, this was an adequate response.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Gartman, gentlemen, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Okay, then let me thank everybody. We hope to have you all on the call when we do the full year results. And that will also be the call in which we do the final business plan results. And, well, we'll see how it goes. There's one quarter missing, but hopefully we can celebrate a good conclusion of our latest 3-year business plan as we work on the new one. You will have read that we've started working in earnest on it, and we will probably present it before the summer. So late Q2, if I would have to guess now, but we'll see how it goes and the exact date. Thank you very much for your attention, and I hope to have you soon.